Welcome to Brand Disciples. We're calling a generation of entrepreneurs to be on mission as we equip the church to disciple them. I'm David Mills, and I'm gifted to touch the world like Jesus by helping people connect to his mission and take new steps toward him. I love to live on the margin between the church and the marketplace, and I'm joined by Amy Alexander.
Hey there. I love seeing people inside and outside of the church walls empowered to be on mission every single day. I'm gifted to be like Jesus and display Jesus to the world as I teach what's true and shepherd people in their journey.
And boy, is that true. We are in the middle of our series here, and we are actually talking today about what we've called Circle 4, or the circle of relationships that is in the business codes of the New Testament. And we've identified that these business codes are actually hidden in the household codes that are present in multiple books in the New Testament. And the reason for that is that there was no corporate business structure. There was no separate businesses until like almost 500 AD, near the end of the Roman era. And so these household instructions were also direct instructions into the conduct and leadership of the businesses that were coming out of these households. We view businesses as economic households, and as members of God's family, that's how we should run our business. So we've talked about how these codes and the way of Jesus was to convert the heart first. We're going to talk about that some more today. And also about how these codes are counterculture, in part by how they lend dignity to groups that were, by others, were treated as lower class. Let's dive into Circle 3. This is the powerless worker. And we're going to be talking, we're going to pull from the First Peter version of these household codes today. Very similar to what's in Ephesians, but we're going to start with 1 Peter today. So verse 16, it says this: live as free people, but do not use your freedom as a cover-up for evil. Live as God's slaves. So the interesting thing about these household codes, in the culture, the Roman Greek culture, they would have been delivered to the head of households. And women, of course, in the culture would be aware of them. They might have been discussed in the household, but certainly they were never addressed to women. They were never addressed to slaves. And so Paul is doing something, in this case, it's Peter, writing in the exact same way as Paul, doing something super interesting, because he is actually direct telling everybody, head of household, spouses, children, all the people involved in their household industry and their slaves, that they're all slaves, which I think is pretty remarkable. And he's telling all of them to live as free people, which is really interesting. How do you tell a slave to live as a free person? We're going to talk about that today a little bit.
I love that when you compare Paul's letter to any other kind of household codes that might have been out at the time that were coming from other really big popular thinkers, all of them would have been addressing those things to the head of the household. And it's really lost on us today how subversive it was that he was addressing women and slaves at all. Like, he's sending out these household codes, he's sending out this letter to the church, and sort of flying in the face of the household owner, he's addressing women and slaves. I think it's so cool.
And the reality was, like, the church was made up of all these different groups, right? The body of Christ, the fellowship, had all these people in it. And so Paul is saying, you guys are all equal. You're all slaves of God together. But you're also free people, right? So it's really remarkable how he's even addressing the slaves at all is remarkable in that culture. But he is telling everyone that they had to live as slaves. Now, in the Ephesians version of this, he says that he's speaking to the masters. He says he's both your master and theirs, talking about the head of household and the servant in the house. And then with him, there's no favoritism. The principle here that as business leaders, as people that are starting businesses, we've got lots of people in relationship with us in all different kind of levels with our business, but that we are, as leaders, we're first supposed to base our relationship with others in our identity in God. And that's where we live. And that's where our relationships and the integrity of relationships come from. And so you've got workers in your circle right now who are essentially powerless, right? They might be offshore workers or outsourced gig workers. They might be low wage employees. They might be contract workers. They might be people that are in a starting position with you, but these people are essentially powerless when it comes to the economic reality of your business, right? They don't have any power. They can't control anything. They're often the first to go. They get the lowest pay. And in many ways, they are dependent upon you. And a person who first finds their identity in Christ as a servant or a slave of Christ isn't going to look down on or mistreat those whose life situation is culturally less powerful. So the only way we can get these relationships right is by first surrendering ourselves to our heavenly master, right? That's how this starts. That's the foundation that we build all this on.
Yeah, it's such a paradox to say that we're both free and we're slaves. I think it's worth spending time thinking about what does it mean to the 21st century American, in my case, white girl, that I'm a slave to Christ. I have spent time actually meditating on what does that even mean? And why would the Bible tell me that I'm that? And why should I be okay with it? But it's actually, there is something really free about it when you consider the subversive tone Paul is taking and you know, there's freedom in boundaries. There's freedom in following the way of a master whose only purpose and only goal is love and peace and joy in life. But it is a really weird tension, this freedom and slavery thing, don't you think?
Yeah, I do. If you put this in like our vernacular, like a lot of people would say, I'm a slave to my mortgage. I'm a slave to my credit cards. I'm a slave to my job, right? I'm a slave to my kids. All I do is drive them around. So I do think that we have some context here, and we have to recognize that he is telling us that there is a difference between us and God, right? God is all powerful, omniscient, omnipresent, and we are not, right? He's eternal, and he has brought us into eternity, and he's created us, right? So he's our creator. So I do think it's an interesting tension, but there's a bigger tension here around this idea of slavery, period. Like even talking about slavery is a hard thing to do. It's tied to just such a wicked part of American history. And I think there's like a general sense of shame around it. Benjamin Franklin called this the American birth defect. That slavery is certainly evil. And so what's happened in the woke space is that because the Bible doesn't say abolish all slavery immediately and overthrow the Roman government and the entire culture today, because Paul and Peter don't say that, then a lot of the woke folks have said, hey, the Bible is repressive. The Bible endorses slavery. And to be truthful about it, there have been people in history who have used some of these verses to try and keep their slaves in line, which is not the intention here. That's why he starts with this passage where he says, we're all slaves to Christ. So there is something here that's hard for us to talk about, but I do think there's these four groups of relationships that are in the household codes. One of them is the powerless worker. And of course, in that culture, that was slaves. In our culture, hopefully it's not slaves for your business, but it certainly is people that are powerless. And there's a lot of them. And we're going to talk some more about that specifically.
And I think going back to your point about hopefully it's not slaves, I think we like to avoid the topic of these kind of overseas origins of much of what makes our life so comfortable. We really ignore it and avoid it. Even the most socially active person might walk around with an iPhone that's been made by some person who making almost nothing and can barely survive. So I think that there is actually a literal place this can be taken. And for some people, they're called into their work because they're trying to make slow fashion affordable, or they're actually trying to right this massive injustice that sort of makes the world go round, which is people who are, some who are slaves, and some who are living as if they were slaves because their conditions and their opportunity is so little, they can barely make ends meet and they work these insane hours and so forth and so on. I think even just the actual topic is an important one for people to consider and think about, because if we're really bringing heaven on earth, are we serious about that? Or is it just a nice thing we say while we walk around in our super cheaply made clothes with our you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Well, we're walking around as this contradiction.
It does beg the question here. Paul and Peter do not go into the culture at this time and say, we're going to abolish slavery. We're going to be abolitionists. We're going to fight against this. And there's a number of reasons for that, which I think this is an important conversation. Why didn't they do that? And we have to recognize that we are in a different culture. We have the right to vote. We have the right to sue. We have the right to, in our country, we have free speech. We're allowed to advocate. We're allowed to raise money. We're allowed to vote with our wallet and not buy things. So we can work to change conditions. And that's a freedom that we have that we certainly should take advantage of. In that culture, though, this was baked into the culture, and it has been baked in the culture since time immemorial. And so what the choice here was, they could follow Jesus' way. Jesus' way is to transform the heart first, right? And we know that we live in this period. It's the now and the not yet. It's not heaven here yet. The kingdom has come, but not in fullness yet. And so that's where we live. And with our rights and privileges and means in a Western culture, we can advocate to make the lives of people better, and we should do that. But I think we have to separate that from what's going on here, in which they're speaking into the culture. And there's some very important lessons here. And I think we should be honest. We can't change everything. We can't just get angry and loud and go picket and somehow make everything change. There is something else going on here called the kingdom of God, which is actually bigger than that. But the counterculture piece here that does come in with Peter and Paul is that, number one, masters are accountable. And that is something that was not said in this time. This was inside the household code and really important thing that they were saying. And number two, we're all slaves of Christ. We're all created beings that have to trust in him. So I think those are important things for us to realize. So let's read the passage. This is 1 Peter. He goes on to say, "Slaves, in reverent fear of God, submit yourselves to your masters, not only to those who are good and considerate, but also to those who are harsh. For it's commendable if someone bears up under the pain of unjust suffering because they are conscious of God. But how is it to your credit if you receive a beating for doing wrong and endure it? But if you suffer for doing good and you endure it, this is commendable before God. To this you were called, because Christ suffered for you, leaving you an example that you should follow in his steps." And then in the Ephesians 6 passage, he says, "And masters, treat your slaves in the same way. Do not threaten them, since you know that he who is both their master and yours is in heaven, and there is no favoritism with him." Well, I like that last part. You're going to get a whooping.
I know.
Yeah, I like that last part. But it does speak to this reality that Jesus came in and he submitted to the authorities and allowed this whole crucifixion thing to happen. And this whole topic is painful for the Western Christian. We don't bend over, bow down to anybody. Like, we're in charge of our own fate. And we certainly have some liberties that are amazing and wonderful, but there is something about the kingdom we have to understand.
Yeah. You were talking about, all of this comes down to understanding who you are first in Christ. And I think about this from the master's perspective. If you've ever met someone that was either famous to the world or famous in your circle, that was so humble that the minute that they get off stage and they walk around expecting no one to talk to them, no one to pull them aside, they truly believe that they are not above anyone in that room. If you've ever encountered someone like that, rare to experience someone that has that level of humility, but it's like a really special experience, I think, because it is encountering someone who has internalized on a really deep level that your value. They've internalized on a really deep level that you are highly valuable to God. They've set themselves aside as almost like a constant practice and said, I just don't hold more value than you. You are valuable to God.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is like this. It's this heart transformation that God is looking for. Like, you're the master of the house. but bro, you're my slave. You're just not more important. But that can be hard because we do live in a culture that's constantly saying you're so special. But it's actually not that. That's not really the message we need to be hearing. There's even a really great, I don't know if any of you have young children and you watched Bluey for any reason, but there's a really great episode where this kind of brat of a cousin is being, her father's explaining why he ran a red light. She says, it's because you're special. He says, well, kind of. So she goes in and she's playing with her cousins and she starts to be a total brat. She's ignoring everybody. She's doing whatever she wants. And her dad says, hey, what's going on? And she says, well, you said that I was special. And he looks at her and he says, you know what, sweetheart? You're actually not special. And then she was so much happier after that because she wasn't special anymore. She had to follow the rules like everybody else. And there was so much more freedom in that. And that's the experience we need to have as Americans, I think, sometimes, is you're actually not special.
Well, and that's what Paul and Peter are saying here. We are all slaves of Christ. I do think there's a couple of really important points here. One of them is that, yet slavery is absolutely evil. And I don't think that you would get any argument from Paul or Peter about that. But when it comes to the kingdom of God, there's something more fundamental that has to be addressed in humanity. And that is the evil of the human heart. And so just changing the rules or the social structure without changing the human heart simply results in just a brand new kind of oppression. And what Jesus is actually after, and what Paul and Peter are leading the church in, is becoming a new humanity, not just some kind of utopian social experiment, right? He wants to transform humans. And that begins on the inside. And if you think about like where this went, so here we have Peter and Paul saying this stuff in the early church period, and they're teaching the church how to live above reproach and how to serve one another and how to treat everyone as equal. By the time we get to like Wilberforce in England, we now have people who actually, they're Christians. And there were Enlightenment philosophers who did oppose slavery, but it was really the Christian activists who had strong convictions who really brought about abolitionist activities in England and eventually came to the United States. So the Bible's instructions here are not meant for us to ignore our civic rights or to avoid fighting, standing up for other people, or to turn a blind eye to injustice, but they are getting us after something that is much more evil. And we think slavery's evil. The human heart's way worse. And that's what God's after. And then there's another key point. Go ahead, Amy.
I was just going to say, I think another piece of that is we have to realize how different history would have been if Jesus came in and was like, we're going to overthrow the culture. And then he had a bunch of violent followers. And then he taught people to go out and overthrow the culture by force. That just continues a cycle of violence. It's like you said, it just creates a different kind of oppression. If Paul's message to the slaves was, you shouldn't be slaves, that's terrible. Walk out of your master's house and go find a new life for yourself. That would have created actually a lot of violence. Which just creates, it doesn't actually solve anything. It just pushes the sin to a different spot. And so there's a very real reality to the fact that Jesus couldn't just come and be a violent force.
But he had to tamp that down in his own followers. And also, if Peter and Paul had advocated for that, what would have happened is the Roman and every other city would have persecuted the church out of existence. Immediately, right then and there, right? But that Jesus' way wasn't to do it this way. It was to change the heart and let the heart work its way out into the life. There's another really big fallacy here that I think is important. And this is one of the reasons that these household codes have come under attack from the woke world. There's this fallacy. It's one of the biggest fallacies of our age that somehow if we remove the power dynamics from human culture, that we will fix everything. We should overturn the power dynamic. So that's the basis of gender studies, Marxism, anarchism, feminism, and critical theory, and others. So this idea that we can eliminate power dynamics from humanity is what is a fallacy. We can't. The problem goes back all the way to the Garden of Eden and after the fall, right? What happened with Cain and Abel? One guy has an acceptable offering, the other guy doesn't. So there's always a power dynamic. It's reality. Jesus' parable of the minas and the talents. One guy gets 5, one guy gets 10, one guy gets 20. Different people have different capacities. Different people have different opportunities. So it's never about removing the power dynamics. There's really only one power dynamic, and that is Jesus is king. That's the power dynamic that we should be going after. And when he's king, then this all changes, right? Remember Israel? They said they wanted to trade God in as king for the human king, right? And so all this bad stuff happens. And so history, our human history, runs on slavery, forced labor, oppression, violence inside of families. And the only cure is a single power dynamic of Jesus as Lord.
Something else I think is really cool, at least about the message to this kind of oppressed worker, is that your work matters. What you're doing actually glorifies God if your heart is glorifying God. Mm-hmm. And that could like seriously change someone's life. If they go from being someone who is bitter all the time, right, and feeling oppressed, and then the next day they wake up and they're still a slave, and if that never changes, but if their life and their work is an act of worship, if how well they serve their master is an act of worship, for one, that's going to minister to their master, like just point blank. But also, it's going to change their whole sense of value and purpose. And I think that's a really cool, I just think that's cool. What we all long for, right? Is purpose in our work.
So it's work. So when your work is worship, it also becomes witness. So part of the transformation of those households was these believing slaves who were worshiping God in their work, and it was transforming people's lives. And so the whole Roman Empire was transformed by Christianity through this process of all kinds of people, women also, becoming Jesus followers, right? And even though their husband was worshiping some other gods. And that was, and then they, we'll talk about that as well in our process here, looking through Ephesians and 2 Peter. So let's get practical. Let's get really practical now. So we know that we're all on the same footing before the cross. We're all slaves of Christ. But we also know there are people in our lives who really are these powerless workers. Now, and I just want to say, just the economic reality is that a person who has an engineering degree and can do engineering gets paid a different amount of money than a person who digs ditches or a person who works in custodial care, right? And that's not just it's not a value judgment. One's worth more than the other. It is an economic reality because when you sell that service, you sell engineering services and you sell janitorial services, you cannot command the same price for them. So even if you wanted to change the rules and I'm going to pay all the custodial people the same as the engineers, you could do that, but you could never pass that on to your customers because they wouldn't be willing to pay it. So there is a system that we are in that is based on what's the value of exchange. And so that's part of the reality that we're dealing with. And so our efforts, there's great efforts going on around building worker co-ops, around employee-owned companies. Those are all great things. And I definitely applaud those things. But I just think at the end of the day, if you're in business, there's going to be people in your circle who are at this entry level, who are at this powerless point, right? And so we got to identify that and ask ourselves the question, as a believing follower of Jesus, this circle of relationships that includes the powerless worker, how am I supposed to treat them? What should I expect from them? And what's my kingdom responsibility toward them? And those are, I think, three really big questions that we have to wrestle with.
I think the kingdom responsibility part is probably the most challenging one, because you can build a culture of honor and respect, and you can build a culture of grace, and you can build a shepherding culture that actually remembers the name of your janitor's kids and was like really genuinely caring, and all of that's really impactful. But then what is that kingdom expression and what's your responsibility to them in a business that's trying to have heaven on earth? That's a tricky one. Because as you said, you can't just magically pay them a ton. I remember, not to make a political statement, but just when Obama put universal healthcare into place, at that time I was working in a public education and I wasn't a full-time worker. I think I was working maybe 36 hours or something like that. But I was an hourly wage employee. Well, when universal healthcare came into place, which was an attempt to right a wrong, right? It was an attempt to help people who needed help. It's not a method I think worked, but that was like really the heart of it, okay? What happened to me was the university couldn't magically pay for my healthcare because I was over the 32-hour mark line. So part of that law said if you work 32 hours or more, you have to provide healthcare for those employees. The university couldn't magically pay for all the employees who were working more than 32 hours. They couldn't provide our healthcare. So they just cut our hours back. So actually what happened to me was I still didn't have healthcare and I was making less money. And so we dream up these really cool things that we want for the people that work for us. But the reality of those things is actually often not really how it works. So I think it, when you put pen to paper, this gets challenging.
It does. I do think it's an individual responsibility that we have to prayerfully manage. But I do think it starts, as we already said, it starts with you surrendering yourself to Christ, but then recognizing that in your circle are these people who are essentially powerless workers. And so they should be in your prayers. You should be thinking about them. You should be treating them, and they should be part of your economic family. So how are you going to treat them? How are you going to create a business structure? Maybe you need to change the way you structure your business. Maybe you need to find ways that you can create pathways for them to pursue their dreams. By the way, in that early church period, there was no pathway for slaves to pursue their dreams. That was not going to happen, right? So we live in a very different culture now, but we can do that. We can provide training and upskilling and cross-training and opportunities, and we can have their best interests at heart. But it doesn't mean we can always change all the rules, but we can think very creatively, very intentionally. And as you said, Amy, there's this character that, and I think you said it so well, that if we are truly humble in relationship with God and we treat people with honor and dignity, it is very transformative for them. The fact that we would care for them. And I used to spend some time with some guys up at Cardone Industries up in Philadelphia. And they had a guy who was, his job was their chief spiritual officer. And he would wander around the factory. And these are people that are like, they're taking apart brake pads from cars and taking apart generators, like really hard work. But he knew all their names. He knew their family's names. And their company was very intentional in supporting those families and ensuring that they had a place to live and that they had health care provided for them. There are ways to do this. I do think we don't get a free pass just because we have offshore workers, right? Just because the person you're hiring lives in Pakistan or India or somewhere else does not mean you can mistreat them. Now, what you're paying them might not be much in American standards. It could actually be a lot in their culture, but you can still, these people can still be abused. And so I think that's an important part of this. Our witness to them is to care about them no matter what the contractual arrangement is, whether you hired them on thumbtack or you local employee or their, and the hard part is we all have limits. We can't do it just whatever we would want to do, but we can be intentional and we can bring dignity where there is none.
Yeah, I think that in our own work, the work that we do with offshore teams, my goal is always to be a different kind of relationship. They're expecting me to behave one way and I see it and they tell me, this is just how it works. We just work over the weekend. That's how it works. And so my goal is constantly to be subverting that expectation so that they know we're like the one client who will never do that. We're the one client who will tell them to just take off and stop working. Please don't work late on this. Please, I'd rather it be late. So I think you have even really small things you can do if your head is in the game and you're thinking, how can I be a different kind of client to them? How can I get past a vendor relationship in this scenario? It's fun, actually.
Yeah. That's really good. And I think we just have to be very practical about it. I remember I was recently out of college and I was working at a shoe store. I won't mention the brand name. I was working at a shoe store. I had three jobs. That was one of my three jobs. And so I was ready to quit. I was making enough money on a different job that I didn't need to work on selling shoes anymore. I was a really good shoe salesman, by the way. But I told them I was giving them a week notice, and they walked me out of the door right then, right? So even their termination policy was don't let anyone stay who's going to be leaving. That was unkind, right? That was really unkind. I was already counting on that income for that week, and I didn't get it. And they just walked me out. It wasn't because I was a bad employee. So even some of our HR policies, we have to look at the way that we treat people. It reminds me of those toil commands from Pharaoh to the people of Israel. More bricks, less straw. More bricks, less straw. And there was this toil that was being enforced, right? And we never want to be that person in their life. Yeah. We never want to be the person who's causing them to toil. And but also, I do think there's opportunity for us to challenge people to improve and to learn and to grow and to build their skills and to become better employees or better team members and to become, you know, add value to their work. So it's not just one-sided where we're just giving everything away. It is elevating people. Dignity means calling them to something more, calling them to own something more in terms of their own responsibility.
Yeah. As a, when you're a small business or you're a solopreneur, I think sometimes the vendor relationships you have, or if you have one team member, someone you're working on a single project with or something like that, those can get personal really fast. And what I mean by that is we take the way that people behave sometimes personally when we need to not. For instance, like that story you just told made me think of a manager, and maybe it was just their HR policy, but it also could have just been a manager who was so hurt by the fact that you were leaving that it made him instantly bitter. It was like, you know what? Just freaking get out. If you're not loyal to what we're doing here, you don't care about me. I don't care about you either. And sometimes I think it's really easy to take things to that place. How come you're not as invested in this process as I am? How come you aren't as loyal to our team as I am? How, you know, and it becomes this like this thing. And so I would say that's maybe a place of warning is how can you make sure that you're putting those things in the right box and not allowing personal bitterness or a sense of,
yeah,
this is my baby. Let's not let those things take over. Let's make sure that the kingdom relationship is what's taking priority.
Another danger, I think, is just our busyness. We're so busy. We're always pushing so hard, especially if you're trying to grow something. It's easy just to not take time to sit and talk with someone. Like somebody could be having a serious crisis in their life. They're still showing up for work. They're still working hard. And you wouldn't even know. You wouldn't even know. And if you've been on the receiving end of that, it matters so much when someone pays attention, just talks to you and listens to you, right? I know I've been on the powerless side of these equations a lot of times. If you're a vendor and you're a contractor, like you're on the powerless side of this a lot and people have power over you, and that's hard. But there is this ethic that we need to live out in terms of just treating everybody with dignity and love. I also think it's important to think about what are the spiritual goals? What are you passing on to people? If they're coming into your circle for a season, what are you passing on to them spiritually? Not only you're showing them something in the way you live, but also are you planting those seeds of faith? Is it intentional? Or is that just getting left outside because they're too busy? Just because they don't have a permanent role with you does not mean you should not be investing in them spiritually and discipling them.
Yeah. Yeah, that the busyness thing, I think that the end result of that is extractive behavior. We've talked some about the difference between extractive business versus ethical business versus redemptive business. And extractive is the normal standard. Ethical is what people in the secular world would say is the goal. And we would say it's beyond that, which is redemptive. And when we're busy, it's really easy to flip on the extractive habits, extractive words, extractive whatever. So it takes, that's two steps away from redemptive. You know, Jesus just took his time, which is so hard for us. But I think it's a really good point, Dave. I think the busyness is like a lot more damaging than we even give it credit for.
Yeah. And there are some industries where just abusing people is normal. We used to have people that we knew who were involved in some of the aerospace industry where they were building airplanes and space shuttles and stuff. Man, those guys just got, they'd get pink slipped all the time. They were just like a cog in the machine. So I think one of the lessons is if you're leading a business, you are in charge of your business model. You are, not your industry, not your customers, you. And you can take control of that business model and you can adjust it, you can reshape it, you can build it so that it does the right thing rather than just doing what the industry does. Just because the industry does it doesn't make it right. You can't just say everyone does this. It doesn't make it right. I do think that this first kind of circle of relationships, the powerless worker in the household codes, sets a completely different standard for the businesses that are led by Jesus followers. And it gives us a different perspective on our responsibility to those workers, the fact that they're part of our economic family, and the fact that we actually want the best for them because we're all slaves of Jesus. We're all slaves before God, right? We're all equal before the cross. So I think this is an important thing for us to be praying about and thinking about. And I'll bet you there's people who are listening to the podcast, you're thinking about people in your life right now, specific people that you're working with and how you want to relate to them. So that's the right direction.
Yeah. I would like to give one bit. I'd like to break a little bondage real quick as we end this, which is a conversation around the powerless worker is not political. It is kingdom. I don't care what persuasion you come from. Jesus cares about the powerless worker. He just does. It's right and good to think about the powerless worker. That's all I'm going to say about that.
That's excellent. That's right. And let's think about them with a kingdom perspective. Let's think about them the way that God does. And they have responsibilities. And it's very clear in this passage that they do have responsibilities, but we have responsibilities too. And we all need to live up to our responsibilities, right? It's not lending dignity to them to allow them to shirk their responsibilities or to work with a work ethic that's less than good. It's not right either for us. The whole concept of righteousness in the Bible is about right relationship. That starts with our right relationship with God, ourself, our submission to Him, and then learning how to treat those in our circles in the way that pleases Him. Good conversation today, Amy. Thanks for all your good insights.
Thank you. Look forward to next week.
See y'all later, or talk to you maybe.